What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording from my office in Dedham, Massachusetts, recording remote. With me, as always, the CEO of HedgeBetter, Justin Fine. You're traveling across America. You're getting somewhere in the next couple days. What better way to pass the time than a deep dive on the New England Patriots for an hour? As always, Justin joining me. What's going on, my man?
Exactly. Yep. Getting ready to go spend the Thanksgiving holiday with some in-laws in the heartland of America. But you know what? We got to talk some football first.
You're schlepping across America on Wednesday morning, my man.
I am. Yeah. It's
Nebraska.
Yeah. Nebraska. You know what? But it'll be good. It'll be a nice little change of pace. You know what? When you're married, you got to compromise, right? We got to do the alternating holidays. It's just the easiest and safest thing to do for everybody. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to do what you got to do. A good marriage is definitely based on compromise. And sometimes that means schlepping across a continent on the busiest travel day of the year to keep the peace. It is the greater good, the lesser of two evils.
Yes, exactly. But looking forward to a little bit of football before I head out.
Yeah, well, let's get into it, because there is a lot to talk about. And it just seems like it's getting worse in some ways for this franchise and this team, the New England Patriots. The kickoff, Justin, is going to be the opening kick to set the table for the rest of the podcast. I really had to think this week if that was the worst game I've seen in the first half I've seen in 30 plus years of being a fan of this team. I really think it might have been the worst half I've seen in my entire time. And it wasn't just because they were getting smoked by Miami. It was they were getting smoked by Miami and they kept shooting themselves in the foot. It was infuriating.
Super infuriating. Costly penalties, which again, nothing new. But it just seems to be that this team is always, always, always finding a way. That offensive line, it just holds and false starts whenever they can least afford it, it seems like. And not only that, but you know, we were talking, the play calling was just absolutely awful. There was a couple things that just let me scratch my head yesterday.
Yeah, well, let's get into that at some point, because you know, definitely there is a lot to break down from the play calling. And you know what? I sit there and I piss and moan about Van Pelt, and at the same time I do feel like he's their best and most stable coach on that coaching staff right now.
Yeah. I totally agree. I mean, I think yesterday was another almost exposing of Gerard Mayo, if you will.
It was. And Mike McDaniels ran circles around Gerard Mayo. So what I really want to get into, Justin, is I want to get into what I would call the triumvirate of failure this year, because I think we can call this season a fail. I am calling it a fail anyways. Yeah. I'm not one of these Patriots fans that's going to sit here and make excuses. It's been 5 years since Brady. Teams are routinely rebuilding and flipping their roster in 1 to 2 years. I make no excuses for this whole thing. It didn't have to be this bad. So I want to get into the triumvirate of failure. That's Gerard Mayo, fail. Elliott Wolf, fail. Yep. And then the ultimate failure for Robert Kraft this year. But before I even go down that road, and we'll break those down one by one, let me just say this. Are you not pissed that there was not a football season this year? Because can we now definitively say this? We did not get a real football season this year. We go back to August and we were saying we want this to be competitive. We want them to be in it until Halloween, Thanksgiving, December. They were never in this thing. This whole thing this year was basically a glorified extended preseason from day one. They treated it as such.
Yeah.
And I don't really feel like they played to win this season, Justin.
Yeah. And you know what? I think it's pretty fair to say when you look around the league, I mean, in my opinion, I think the number one thing that keeps a lot of organizations from being competitive is not having a quarterback, not having a competent play caller. Right. Yeah. And that was, it turns out in hindsight, looking back after seeing Drake May for 6 weeks or so, that was the one issue you wouldn't have had this year. You know what I mean? So it just seems like they had the one big thing kind of figured away, at least, you know, it's looking like that. And they just dropped the ball everywhere else.
They absolutely did, because I still don't know if Drake May is going to be a franchise quarterback. We're going to get to him a little later because I am starting to get some concerns about him. But what I will say 1,000% right now is that he is a good enough quarterback that if you put a decent team or a good team around him, you should have a respectable team right now in 2024. Agreed. So the fact that they kind of hit on the quarterback and they're still as bad, if not worse, than they were last year, I think is just a damning indictment of basically everything they did this offseason.
Exactly. Yeah, it's very, you know, you think about it, and I know this team, may, or, you know, things might feel a little bit different now that we have Drake May, but it's crazy to think that we have a significant upgrade at quarterback, and yet our team just looks even worse, and we could potentially have a worse record than we did last year. Like, I thought last year and Mac Jones was like the bottom of the barrel for us.
Yes, agreed. And honestly, I don't know how you feel about this, but I did, that did cross my mind this week. I mean, 3-14 is a very realistic option right now. I mean, Indianapolis this week is probably their most winnable game, but let's face it. I think Indianapolis is a better team, probably a far better team than the Patriots. At Arizona, I mean, again, that's a beatable team, but this team stinks. So it would be an uphill battle there. And then they go on a bye week somewhere in there, which they're already like half mentally checked out. Right. I mean, half these guys are like got their plane tickets booked to like Aruba or Cancun already. Yeah. And you're going to have a bye week in week 15 or something, and then come back and play a few games after that. Sounds like a setup for disaster.
Yes.
And then they end with Buffalo, LA, Buffalo. So where's the two wins on that schedule?
It's getting tough to find them. I mean, you're going to be lucky to find one at this point, I feel like.
Right. So you have a better quarterback in a worse record.
Yep.
That what does that say? You're headed in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. It definitely looks like there's a lot to be desired with this team. And in some ways, even more so than last year.
Yeah. And let's face it, it was over before Thanksgiving. It was over before Halloween.
Yep.
It was probably over in training camp. It was over before it started. There was we wanted in the summer, you can pull the tapes. We said like 20 times, we just wanted a football season. Well, we kind of really didn't get one this year.
Yeah, totally. And to that point, and I'm sure this is what we're getting into, the fact that we are no longer playing meaningful football, and yet we are still making some of the on-field in-game decisions that we're making in terms of like the play calling and the situational football and like how conservative we are. It's like, it is just boggling my mind that, okay, we're past the point of meaningful football and we are still playing as if like the number one seed is on the line.
Agreed. And they still coach it so conservatively, especially on offense. And they keep a restraining bolt on Drake May. I feel like they're afraid to really unleash him because he's going to make bad plays. And you know what's happening? They're falling way behind. He's getting a ton of pressure on him, and he's making bad plays anyway. Yeah. So, like, what is the point when you're 3-8, 3-7, 3-9, whatever, of holding back at this point? They approach this year like a developmental season. I hate that they did that, but they did that. And why not let it rip at this point?
I totally agree. And you know what? It's funny. I was watching the game with a buddy of mine the other day, and I said the same thing maybe four or five times. Why aren't we just letting Drake May open it up? Just take the training wheels off, take the restraints off, and just let him go for it. At this point, this kid should just be getting put in as many, you know, learning situations as possible, like experiential situations, just working all those kinks out, getting better. And really just letting loose. And it's the opposite. I mean, just the amount of the conservative attitude towards the play calling and towards the offense, it's just boggling me.
But Justin, it's a reflection of their whole attitude toward this whole season. You can go back to the offseason, to things Wolf and Mayo said, even Kraft at one point in the offseason saying something like, we're probably going to lose a lot of games this year. I mean, they went into the season with the attitude that losing was okay. This was a rebuilding year. And as a fan, I just find it completely unacceptable because this is the fifth year since Brady left, and because it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, you can go in any one season in the last 20 years in the NFL, and you can find a handful of teams every year that go from worst to first, or, you know, a 5-win team to a playoff team. So it was the attitude this year. And it was really the start, the setup for what this year became, which was a colossal disappointment.
Totally.
All right, let's get into the triumvirate of failure, Wolf, Mayo, Kraft, one by one, and just say a few things about each one, break it down, because it needs to be said. I think personally, Justin, I have no problem with a rebuilding year, but what I have a problem with is $139 million in cap room and a rebuilding year, and it's been 5 years since they did anything, and Brady was here. They have the worst roster in the NFL, but they also have Drake May. So they might not be the worst team in the NFL right now, but at the end of the day, I think this was a total failure for Robert. This was his first year after Bill Belichick. We said last year that Robert Kraft would be on the clock the second he fired Bill Belichick, right? Because he had Belichick to insulate him for years. Belichick made all the decisions. Mm-hmm. He was the head of the monster, had total control. Robert Kraft went on the clock the second they threw Bill Belichick out that door and brought in Gerard Mayo. And I hope I'm wrong about this, but I think, first of all, I think Kraft failed in bringing in Gerard Mayo. I have a hard time seeing this team even be good in 2025. It feels like they're several years away. And I think they've painted themselves into a corner with Gerard Mayo because they're almost stuck or resigned to keep him because of a lot of external factors and what they've said about him and the fact that they have put him in such an unfair position because the talent on this team is no good. They're almost resigned to keep this guy. But I don't think it's going to work out with Gerard Mayo. I think that was a terrible decision by the Crafts. And I think it's going to take 2 to 3 years for that to fail. And it's really just going to set this whole franchise back.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I mean, you know, you talk about this weekend alone. I mean, you know, Gerard Mayo, he might be a first year head coach, but he's seen this Miami team 6 times heading into Sunday. And it looked like, you know, from the play calling, the scheme, the way this team was prepared, it looked like he had never seen this team before. He had no clue how to prepare for them. Like that to me was a big red flag. You know, the Miami Dolphins just had their way with us. The other thing I want to talk about.
But Justin, can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
Whose failure is it really? Is it really Gerard Mayo's failure when we're watching this game? And we see him struggle. Isn't this Robert Kraft's failure? This is totally predictable that Mayo was going to struggle with lack of experience.
100%. I mean, you put the wrong person in the wrong position. It's not their fault if they don't succeed. They can try their best and do their best. But, you know, it's just becoming a little evident that at least at this point in time, Mayo seems to be a little over his head, a little outclassed. He may be a good locker room guy. He may be a good players coach, but when it comes to decision making, X's and O's, like in-game adjustments and management and strategies and all those things that you kind of have to be able to, you know, weigh out on the fly and make these strategic decisions. It just seems like the game is just passing him by, going right over his head.
It does. But it was totally predictable from day one. We said it day one. So, I mean, you know, this hire was made for all the wrong reasons. You can't hire a head coach because you had a nice time with him on a vacation, you know, and then sit here and watch this guy struggle. I mean, it was already going to be hard enough to replace Bill Belichick. That's already an exceedingly hard assignment. A team that was going to be bringing in a new quarterback, had tons of holes on the roster going into this year. That is a tough, tough coaching assignment. To put a guy like this in a spot like that, it is owner malpractice. That's what I'm going to call it. I'm going to use a doctor term. It is ownership malpractice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was reckless. It was impulsive. It was emotional. It was everything you shouldn't do in a decision like that.
I totally agree. And you know what? Like, just one play, and I'm dying to get this out here. Just one thing that I couldn't understand. And I don't know why this bothers me so much, but I think it bugs me just because I don't think Bill or an experienced coach would have ever done this. And it just, it really is just little situational things. I think back to the challenge from Gerard Mayo in that first half when the Jalen Waddle catch, when he threw the challenge flag. Now that ultimately winds up costing them a timeout, meaning that, you know, going into the end of the half, they're down a timeout for any potential 2-minute warning, last minute drive, you know, in anything like that. Right. So but if you think about it, that was probably one of the stupidest challenges I've ever seen because there was a defensive pass interference on that call. And even if they called it incomplete, it would have been like a 2-yard difference. Miami would have had the ball there in a first down. So by challenging that play, all you did was risk one of your precious timeouts that you may need at that point at the end of the first half. And like that to me is like a microcosm.
For sake of a couple yards.
For the sake of a couple yards, if that. I agree. Like that to me is like a microcosm of just the inexperience showing and just making a decision that I think was even clear to the fans. Like this is kind of dumb.
Yeah. But again, it's like, you know, what do you expect from the guy? Like
right.
he doesn't know the game well enough. He's never coached anything. Like, great. Right. If I have to hear one more time about how he was like a corporate bigwig at Optum, I mean, I'm going to throw up. Like, who cares? It's totally irrelevant. Like, he is a good leader. You can see that. He's a good leader. He has nice traits about him. And he could be a really good head coach one day in like 5 to 10 years with more experience, but he is so over his head. And it really comes down to the fact that Kraft put him in this position where he was never going to succeed. And I just don't see this working out, to be honest with you, unless something crazy happens. And I think it's a shame because you're really holding this whole franchise back. You've got a young quarterback. How are you going to develop him? You're already setting him up to have a new coach in a year or two, right? Yeah. It's like, it's just a total mess, Justin.
Yeah, and look, Gerard Mayo, he skipped the ranks. He jumped right over coordinator, right? And it's funny because, you know, we talk about some of these, you know, potential, head coaches in the wings just waiting out there, you know, guys like Ben Johnson, so-and-so that we're talking about could potentially be, you know, hot names as the next head coach of an organization. It's like, all the guys we're naming are guys that are either former head coaches or current head coordinators. And
right.
You know what I mean? And you just
of successful teams.
Of successful teams.
That and, called plays.
Exactly. And we took a guy who wasn't even the head play caller and head coordinator on what was a team that was in a 3-year slump and promoted him right to head coach. So
let's talk about Mayo. Okay. So the second head of the, which we kind of are anyways, but the second head of the triumvirate of failure, this is the analogy I'm going to use for Gerard Mayo, Justin. You ever heard the story about the father who like finds his kid smoking and gives them a carton of cigarettes and said, you're not leaving your room until you smoke all the cigarettes. You ever hear that wives tale?
Yeah.
I feel like that's Gerard Mayo right now. Like he sat there last year under Bill Belichick and he thought he could do it better. I think he was going up the back stairs to the Crafts. He was undermining Bill. It's why there was bad blood between them. He thought the culture was the problem. He thought Belichick was the problem. He thought it would all be better if he brought in some fresh ideas and broke down some silos and created a different environment. And maybe you bring in a better quarterback and you have a better team. Well, all of a sudden, you look up now, the culture is worse. The situation is dysfunctional in the locker room. It's kind of dysfunctional in the front office. I heard Mayo take some swipes, subtle jabs at Elliot Wolf today. I don't know if you saw that. No. This is a dysfunctional mess. And it's not as easy, Gerard, as it looked from afar. When you're the person in charge, Gerard Mayo, it becomes harder. Maybe some of those things that Bill Belichick did that you hated, that we all hated the last 20 years, maybe there was a method to his madness.
You know what? Maybe there was. And we are learning the hard way. And I think Gerard Mayo is also learning the hard way that, you know what? I mean, from the outside looking in, it might be easy to come up with solutions to fix something. And you know, you might think you have a better way to do it. But we're learning in practice that, I mean, look, there was obviously a ton that he was not prepared for, not accounting for, and not ready to take on.
Totally, totally right. Like, be careful what you wish for, Gerard. Yeah. It seemed so easy to throw rocks at the castle last year, run up the back stairs to Kraft, right? Yeah. And piss and moan about the culture. I think the culture is as bad, if not worse, this year. I don't know. What do you think? Is the culture any better?
I mean, you know what? I still see a team that's playing hard
Last year, in all fairness, right?
I know. And so that's the thing is like, I mean, I see a team that's like playing hard and, you know, I don't think a team that's like quit or having a huge internal struggle still goes out there and plays hard, but there's definitely an issue. I can't quite put my finger on what it is, but there's gotta be some rumblings in that locker room, you know, whether or not they have the right guy to lead them.
Well, go back to training camp and Matt Judon spouting off, right? Consistently, really, I would say from the beginning of training camp until the last few weeks, there have been a steady stream of off-field locker room problems with this team that I think are far in excess with anything we ever saw in the Belichick era.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's is you get that changing of the guard, and that opens up the opportunity for people to, you know, maybe either step out of line or take opportunities and shots that weren't there before. And you know what? Again, like when you're losing, when you're not winning, it's way easier for people to fall out of line and kind of challenge, you know, the authority in the building.
Absolutely. You know, and we're talking all this stuff about culture, Justin. And we really didn't even get into the actual on-field coaching, which I think has also been extremely problematic. Right. Because you tell me, I think even lay people can get a sense of the fact that Mayo pretty much consistently loses the chess match to any experienced coach he goes against. Like, do you feel like they're making adjustments in games to get themselves in the best position to win? No. It does not look or feel like that to me.
Honestly, I feel like we went from one of the best in-game, in-game adjustment makers and shot callers to one of the most inexperienced in least proficient in the league right now. I agree totally. It just seems like we're totally outmatched by other coaches and coordinators.
And I would say it's actually probably been worse on defense, which is kind of scary because that is supposed to be Gerard Mayo's specialty. And I'm looking at these last two games where I'm like, you know, the chess match that Gerard Mayo got pantsed both weeks by experienced offensive coaches that ran circles around him schematically.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said earlier, he's seen this team six times, I believe seven as of yesterday. And it just looked like he still had no clue how to stop him or how to scheme something up to make it competitive. It was crazy.
No doubt about it. And even as a fan, you're sitting there, be like, they're going to throw a slant. They're going to throw a dig. They're going to throw an in cut. And they did nothing to address it.
Yep. Totally agree.
And then Justin, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the lack of discipline and fundamentals, because that was clearly on display on Sunday, right? The penalties that just like, I think they had six pre-snap penalties in the first half. You want to blame the players. Fine. I agree with that. It's on them to be more focused. But when you're consistently shooting yourself in the foot, like this team does across multiple games, multiple weeks, the better part of the season, I feel like that has to come back to the coach. That does come back to the coach.
Totally. Totally comes back to the coach. I mean, look, you do got to put a certain amount on the player, but discipline starts, you know, with the coaching. It starts from the top. It starts from within. I mean, you can't tell me that during the Brady Belichick era that they just had all of these disciplined guys who were just so much better than what they have now. Like, no, like you mean, like there were definitely guys who were capable of making these dumb mistakes back for 20 years and they didn't. And as part of it was because of the coaching and the leadership.
No question about it. And that is gone now. And you are absolutely seeing the effects of that. I mean, they were an undisciplined team at times the last few years under Belichick, to be fair, but I think it's actually gotten worse, not better, under Mayo.
I agreed. And look, I mean, you know, it seems like in particular, it's the O-line, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but this O-line is really struggling with penalties. And you know what? I get it. You know, the Tom Brady effect when he was back there, guys were just, you know, they took their game just to that next level. Just they were that much better and that much sharper, I guess. And, you know, you go from Tom Brady to, you know, Mac Jones and now a rookie quarterback. It's obviously not the same type of feel. But I mean, you know, as an offensive line, you got to understand that, you know, there is so much riding on you guys keeping it together, especially knowing that it's not the most sturdy unit to begin with. I mean, these guys just seem like they're totally ready to go on vacation for the off season. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, they're not focused at all. And like we said it after the Rams game last week, you know, they killed their second and third drive after having a great scoring drive on their opening drive with offensive line penalties. And they did it again yesterday. They killed their first couple of drives with offensive line penalties on their first series. They have a third and three, and they take a false start to make it a third and eight by Vidarian Lowe. On their second series, they're actually having what was one of their best drives of the game, looked like they were going to score, and then they shot themselves in the foot two straight times,
yeah,
and then basically knocked themselves to the back end of field goal range with offensive line penalties, yeah, and ended up missing a longer field goal. Playing it, by the way, super conservative on that third down and 16, which I hated that call. They settled for a run, right? Talking, yeah, about what you were just talking about. But you know, they were in that position because of lack of discipline and penalties. So yeah, it is the same beam that we keep seeing with this team in terms of that.
Totally.
So Justin, are we stuck with Mayo? I mean, we've kind of gone back and forth about this. Is there any chance this falls apart? This is my take on this. Last week I said, I think it hasn't been a total disaster because he hasn't lost the locker room. And I would say that observation holds true because they did not quit. Even yesterday, they came out and played hard in the second half.
Yeah.
But what I will say, and you can tell me what you think about this, is that if they play over the next six games like they played in that first half of Miami, I think it opens the door to potentially Mayo being one and done. Like, it's going to take something remarkable for this team to move on from Mayo after one season. And that kind of bad, undisciplined, unfocused, sloppy mess of a game is in, I think, in that wheelhouse.
Yeah. You know, I'm still of the frame of mind that it's going to take an act of freaking God to get Jerod Mayo out of there next year. I mean, I think like you said, unless something catastrophic happens, he's probably going to be back for year two. But I'm really not even considering that he won't be back next year. But for me, I'm thinking kind of like you said, like long term, right? Like how long does this experiment go before he either shapes up or gets shipped out, right? And I think as Patriots fans, we are hoping to God that Robert Kraft has at least a short enough leash that it's not going to totally ruin Drake May and ruin this organization. Because again, if you've hit on that guy, if you have that quarterback, you have a nice short little window where he's a rookie on a team friendly deal and you can build the talent around him. You can capitalize on it. You can spend that money and bring in some big free agents and all that stuff. Like, your window is going to rapidly close if you waste 2 to 3 years in a experimental project with Jerod Mayo and it never pans out.
I agree. And I mean, you have this narrow 5-year window where May is on a rookie contract and you've already wasted the first year. I mean, if you put 2 or 3 years into Jerod Mayo experiment and it doesn't work out, then you really will be wasting by and large the majority of that time. And you might, by the way, drag Drake May down with you in that process. I mean, who knows, yep, what he will be at the end of that. You know, you look at a guy like Justin Herbert, who got ruined by Brandon Staley for a few years, and he seems to have recovered, right? But there are a lot of examples, Sam Darnold, you know, Geno Smith, Mitch Trubisky. I mean, you can go down the list of guys that showed promise early on and then weren't able to recover, and they're kind of ruined by their situations. With me, Justin, for Mayo, and I want to say this, it's not the 3-14 record or the 4-13 record that makes me worried about him.
Yeah.
It's really more about how it's looked and the fact that it's been a mess the whole time. Like, going back to like February, it's kind of been a mess with Jerod Mayo.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. And I get it. Just like rookie players have a learning curve. I mean, you know, rookie head coaches have a learning curve, but you know, you want to start to see some signs of improvement that Mayo is settling in and he at least belongs there. And I'm just not seeing it right now. And I just don't know how long you have to give him that opportunity. I mean, look, you're wasting valuable time. I still think he deserves a second year. I'd like to see him back for year two. And I'm not
really. Whoa, you think he deserves a second year or you think he's going to get a second year? Because that's totally different.
I think he deserves a second year because I think there's a decent amount that was out of his control. I think that, like, look, he gets a first year learning curve. Take that with a grain of salt. I also think he's not being really helped by his roster, right? So I think he deserves an opportunity for this front end you know, this front office to go in and get him some free agents and build through the draft and, you know, give him a little bit more to work with. So I think between a first year learning curve and having a really depleted roster, especially some unforeseen stuff, like, you know, you lose Barmore for a while, you lose Peppers, you lose Judon, all that stuff. So you lose Bentley. So like there's stuff that's beyond his control. So I do want to bring him back for a second year, but I think the second year is where my leash ends.
See, I disagree. I'm not convinced he deserves a second year. And if I'm the Crafts and somebody shakes free, like John Harbaugh, or, you know, a big name person that I think could really get the best out of Drake May, that would be a clear coaching upgrade. I think I would do it and I wouldn't hesitate. I would chalk this up to a miss and I would move forward if something like that presented itself. Now, remember, Justin, with Jerod Mayo, it has been a mess on the field. It has been a mess off the field. Don't forget the role of his mouth in this and how many times he's put his foot in his mouth too, yeah. Because I do think that will be a factor when the Crafts take a look at him at the end of the season.
Yeah. Look, I totally agree with all that. I think that, but you know what? I also look at it and I say there were some pretty good names that were available this time around. And it seems like that's we didn't true. Even want to consider anybody. You know what I mean? Like we were just, we were willing to pass on some good names for this guy, including letting go of arguably the best coach of all time. So it's like, I just feel like the way the Crafts have set themselves up, like they almost have to give him a second year.
Yeah, but if they do give him a second year, it's going to be because out of a misplaced sense of obligation and not because I think he's earned it. Like I really feel that way. Like he has actually, he has the complete opposite. He has, even among like 3 or 4 win teams, he has been particularly disastrous in some ways. So, you know, he'll probably be back. I agree with you. He will probably be back. But, you know, if it was my decision and if I was the Crafts, I would look long and hard at it. Justin, let's talk quick about Elliot Wolf, because he's the third head of the triumvirate of failure. Let's just say this. Everything Elliot Wolf has said and done with this team from day one has been wrong, except for drafting Drake May, which a lot of people would argue pretty much anyone would have done. Wolf thought he could resign all the pieces from last year, plug Jacoby Brissett in, change the culture, put in a bunch of B-level free agents, and this team would have a respectable, good season, be a good team. And he was dead, dead wrong. Chukwuma Okorafor, Jacoby Brissett, Jalen Polk, go down the list. Pretty much everything he did besides drafting Drake May blew up in their face. It's all been wrong. I think Elliot Wolf, I said in the spring, I thought he was a strength. I have to be honest. I think he gets an F for his first year on the job.
Yeah. Really, other than drafting May, which, like you said, was pretty much a no-brainer at that point.
Maybe he should get a D because he drafted May.
Right. But again, it's, you know, it's not like he shocked the world when he took Drake May, right? So again, you know, it's kind of a layup for him. But yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, we have not, and not only that, but let's just also note the fact that he did draft Drake May, but he's probably one of the major contributors to why Drake May didn't play until week 6 or 7. And
yes, why that's a great point.
You know what I mean? And why we find ourselves not playing meaningful football. Because even as bad as the Patriots have been, they'd still probably be in like a Bengals situation where they're in the hunt with four wins and still somewhat playing meaningful football, you know?
Right. But all you really need in the AFC right now is 4 wins, and you still have a glimmer of hope.
Yes, exactly. So yeah.
Yeah. Total fail in his first year for Wolf. And I mean, I think short of Drake May, I would say that they actually went backwards this year in a lot of ways.
100%, including the most glaring one, which is that defense, which at coming out of last year was I guess their perceived strong point or anchor. And everything other than their quarterback has taken a step back.
Well, that's just it. You make a list of like priorities and needs for 2025. And I mean, yeah, offensive line and receiver, we could check the box on that for the last, you know, umpteen 5, 6, 7 years. Yeah. And those are still huge needs. Now some other needs are developing. Yes. And you know, it just feels like they have more holes to fill, and like they're going in the wrong direction, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. I'll give you one more thing, Justin. If you're gonna keep Mayo, before we move to the non-football topic of the week, okay. If you're gonna keep Mayo, there's one guy out there that might get fired this year who I think would be the perfect fit to bring in here and be an offensive coordinator or an offensive assistant next year. And you mentioned his name last week as someone that might get fired, and that's Zach Taylor. If Zach Taylor gets canned, I think he'd be a terrific asset for the Patriots. If they're gonna go the route of keeping Gerard Mayo, find a guy like Zach Taylor, bring him in here and let him stabilize the offense and give Mayo some valuable support.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? To Zach Taylor's credit, you know, Joe Burrow's rookie year and, to an extent, even his sophomore campaign, I mean, you know, before he got hurt, that was a very conservative offense. And once they realized what they had in Drake May, they put some weapons around him. Zach Taylor opened that offense up and he started letting Joe Burrow cook. And that's what made the Bengals. And I hope that, you know, that's really what we need, I think, is somebody to come in here and open this offense up a little bit and let your talent really shine. Now they have, they have Jamar Chase and T Higgins. So it's a little bit different, right. But
right. Well, maybe we'll have T Higgins next year.
Exactly. Right. I guess we're the front runners to land him.
Well, we have the most money, but right. We'll see about that. Right.
Yeah.
All right. And then let's talk quickly, Justin, about the quarterback, because before we move on, because I do want to say, I thought that was his worst game as a starter.
Yeah.
I actually thought he started off playing well early in the first quarter of that game. And I would say that you're starting to see the seeds being planted of ruining a young quarterback. And I'm not saying that's going to happen with him, but what you're seeing from Drake May is that he's starting to make mistakes when he's trying to do too much.
Yep.
He's trying to do too much back there because he knows it's all on him. And I feel like that's a very dangerous situation. That's how good young quarterbacks get ruined. It's how you end up with Jameis Winstons and Mitchell Trubisky's and Sam Darnold's. And right now, I'm very concerned about the turnovers with Drake May.
Yeah, I agreed. He had a couple of sloppy plays the other day. And part of that, you know, look, part of that too is he's down, he's under pressure. I mean, how many times did that Miami Dolphins team just run on him, like unopposed? Like there was nobody in front of him, just beeline, 2-3 guys, just direct line to Drake May, not even an offensive lineman or running back in the way. And you know, that forces Drake May to do some dumb stuff. I mean, like that interception he had to the freaking lineman, like that was just a, hey, oh crap, I'm about to get sacked, let me throw it up there type of thing.
Exactly. And I thought there was a lot of times where you saw his mechanics wasn't as good as it has been in the past. A couple throws off the back foot or sloppy throws that I think were in one sense a direct function of the poor offensive line play in front of him. But those bad habits, again, that's how it starts with these guys. They develop bad habits. They start being scattered. I have no regrets about the fact that they're playing Drake May. He was ready to play. The team was ready for him. It was 100% the right move. But it is unfortunate that he is in the situation he's in. And you see, this is what happens when you put a good young player on a bad team in a bad organization, which is what they kind of have been the last few years. Hate to say it. Yeah. It is playing with fire with his future.
Yeah, totally, totally, totally. The pendulum could swing from, oh, wow, look at what Drake May's doing with nothing to, oh, crap, like he's really getting bogged down by his lack of talent around him.
And again, the fumbling, too. He fumbled really twice. Yeah. He got lucky on the first one, and then the second one was not so lucky.
Exactly, yeah. A couple sloppy turnovers can ruin any quarterback's day easily. So
absolutely. Okay, Justin, let's move to the non-football topic of the week. This is where we're gonna take a brief rest from the universe of football and discuss something completely unrelated. It is Thanksgiving on Thursday, so I want to ask you, what is your favorite and least favorite part of Thanksgiving?
Favorite and least favorite part of Thanksgiving. Okay, I would say my favorite part of Thanksgiving, and look, I know this is the low-hanging fruit, but I love, you know, sitting around with everybody and getting to watch football. You know, that to me, like, that's a, it's such a nice part of the holiday. You know, you got your food, everyone's got the food, you know, you got everybody around having a good time, and you just got some nice football to soak back into. I mean, you know, sometimes at parties, you know, in gatherings, you gotta, you know, work extra hard to keep engaged and make small talk and make your rounds. But I love how at Thanksgiving, you got a great excuse. You can just pop into the couch and watch football and just enjoy yourself and get a little bit of rest. But I love that.
Go ahead. Least favorite.
I'm going to be totally, totally honest here. My least favorite part about Thanksgiving is I think it's like one of the worst holidays for food. I'm not a big roasted turkey guy. I'm not a big cranberry sauce guy. Like, I don't know. I think as far as holiday foods, Thanksgiving to me is my least favorite. I know that's an unpopular opinion, but.
Well, no, I kind of agree with that because I feel like, look, like it's like corned beef and cabbage. Like people eat that on St. Patrick's Day. To me, that's something you can stomach once a year.
Yeah.
You do not want to be eating corned beef and cabbage more than once a year. I mean, right. I won't even eat it once a year, but I'm just saying it's like that kind of thing. You can do it once a year. I kind of feel the same way about like a full Thanksgiving meal with like roasted turkey. Yep. Who is roasting a turkey at any other time besides Thanksgiving? It's really not that good to eat it unless you cook it perfect, which almost no one does. Yep. It's pretty much like eating a three-ring binder. It comes out dry. Yep. You have to dump like gravy and cranberries on it to make it edible. Yep. It's I agree with you. Turkey is so overrated in terms of like eating turkey is so overrated. I have in the past, and this may be innovative, I've gone full sides. Like I don't even go turkey.
Yeah.
Like just full sides, like forego the turkey altogether.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't blame you. I know our family, we usually have an alternative. There's usually a roast or some other meats in there. And I gotta be honest, I never go for the turkey. Never.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. We do tenderloin and we do fish.
Exactly.
And I most years I don't even look at the turkey.
Yeah.
And I feel like most people actually, if you give them an alternative, they won't even touch it.
Totally. 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 Yeah.
It's probably the most overrated food going. One of the more overrated foods going.
I agree.
All right. And then look, I think for me, my favorite part of Thanksgiving, it's funny how priorities change over the years, right? Because if you had asked me this question like 2015-ish years ago, my favorite part of Thanksgiving would be the night before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Big Wednesday. Yeah.
Big Wednesday, right? Yeah. Second biggest drinking night of the year.
Yeah.
Next to New Year's is the night before Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah.
Why is it a great night? It's old friends, old enemies, and old lovers all in one place at one time.
Absolutely.
And something always happens. Something bad always happens.
Yeah. No, I used to love the night before Thanksgiving. I mean, hell, if I wasn't traveling, I'd probably still be, you know, trying to do something. It always, the night before Thanksgiving, like you said, especially like in those college, post-college years, when everybody's been those away
first
for
couple
a bit, everybody
years.
Gets back together. That's truly, truly awesome. And then you wake up the next day, you're moving a little slow, but you know, you got football and food waiting for you.
Yeah. And you're 22. Yeah. So everything just like 19, 20, 21, whatever, it just bounces off you. Like it's nothing.
Yes.
But that's always a great time. But now, you know, now I love that it's really quiet on Thanksgiving morning. Yeah. So I'm up early with the kids. I don't go out anymore. And I can go for a run and no one's out there. And living in a place like Dedham, which can be busy at times and lots of traffic, it's nice to have a morning that's really quiet. So I like that about it. Football is great. We all know that. I'm going to enjoy that. My least favorite part of Thanksgiving, I got to say, is like the food coma. I don't like feeling too bogged down. And I think, you know, obviously it's a day based on indulgence, but like that feeling, that groggy, like weighed down feeling, not a huge fan of that.
Yeah, totally. And you know what too, like now that I think about it, you know, what else about Thanksgiving is like, there's not a lot of, it's not really involved like compared to some of the other big holidays when you think about it, right? You think about like Christmas, like, you know, you got, you know, you're buying presents and there's all these activities that come around Christmas time, right? Same thing with like Halloween, like some of these other holidays, but like Thanksgiving, there's like, other than just cooking the food and showing up, there's very little like prep work or like surrounding activities or things that go into Thanksgiving. It's simple. It's a simple holiday.
What about this, Justin? You get 30 people in a house.
Yeah.
Or whatever, 20 people, whatever. Everyone's overeating. There's like one to two bathrooms, say maybe three in most houses. Yeah. And then like, you know, 20, 30 to 60 minutes after everyone gorges themselves, what do most people have to do? They have to go to the bathroom. They have to take a dump.
Yeah.
And you've got like all of these relatives in one place. And like, that might be actually the worst part of Thanksgiving. Like everyone's trying to sneak in a dump after you overeat. And it's like, it's just like this too many people, not enough toilets. Like you walk in the bathroom and it's already completely blasted out by like, God knows who. That might be the worst part of Thanksgiving now that I think about it.
Yep, absolutely. Totally agree. That is when you got to find.
Is there not a subtle?
Yeah, no, you're always trying to find like that obscure bathroom that's like upstairs or like down
the hidden bathroom. Yeah,
the hidden bathroom that nobody else is using. Yeah, exactly.
But a lot of houses don't have the hidden bathroom, or you have to like traipse like into someone's like, you know, the place no one else is, like the back hall or like where the bedrooms are, or you're like walking into the master suite and you're like, oh man, can I do this here? Can I go to the bathroom on the master toilet? Yeah, exactly. Is that allowed?
Yeah. Totally agree. Yeah.
It's one of the worst parts about Thanksgiving. You're in someone else's stadium. You know, you don't want to be playing on the road. You want to be at home, playing at home. You're playing on the road. It's tough.
Exactly. Yep. And then one last thing too, I will say is that if you, I think it's always hysterical too, that it's like you go from like arguably like the most gluttonous day of the year where you're just eating and in a food coma, watching football, lying down, to some people like getting up at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. the next morning, hitting like the Black Friday rush. Like that to me is.
You didn't even mention that.
No, like
that's the worst part of Thanksgiving. Yeah. Takes the cake. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
Black Friday. Come on. Get a life.
Yeah. Thank God for Amazon. I do Cyber Monday now. That's what I do. So
totally. Like you see people out there at like 3 a.m. I feel sorry for the poor people that have to work at like Best Buy. Oh. They're making like, you know, bad money to begin with. It's a tough job. And you get like 3 days a year where the place isn't open and you have to go in on Thanksgiving night and open up your store so someone can feel like they got a good deal on like a laptop that they probably don't even really need.
Right. Exactly.
That is the winner. You just hit a home run. That is the winner. That is the worst part of Thanksgiving, Black Friday.
Yeah.
Okay, brother. Let's talk a little bit about this game on Sunday against the Colts. I don't know, man. What do we say about that? Does it even matter? Are you moving to tank mode at this point? I mean, I want to see good thing. I want to see them win. I want to see May look good. I don't think I want them to tank this year.
That's the thing. I don't want them to tank. I just want them to change their approach. It's like, okay, we're at the point where I don't mind them losing. It's how they lose. If they lose because they're conservative and they're not taking risks, and I feel like they're not making the most out of the talent that they have at quarterback, that's what is gonna annoy me. I want to see this team be aggressive. I want to see them, you know, taking shots on third and long, not giving it up and running it up the gut. I want to see them, you know, being a little bit more aggressive with that offense. I want to see them going for two, going for it on fourth. Like, just do stuff that is going to be exciting to watch, but is also going to give your young quarterback and some of those young weapons some good situational experience when you actually do play football that matters in subsequent seasons.
I want to see Drake May play a clean game. I want to see Drake May stack multiple clean games together going down the stretch. That to me is the most important thing. I want to see him, you know, throw only one or two picks over these six games. I think that's important.
I do too. I think it is important. But you know what? It's even going to be worse if he's not having clean games and it's super conservative. Because it's like if he's not having the cleanest game, but you can say, damn, they were super aggressive. He opened it up. He took some chances. He took some risks. Like, I can at least justify that. But to be sloppy and conservative, like, that's the worst, I think, of both worlds.
It is. And that's by the way, what it's been like the last few weeks
or for the
majority of the year. So, I mean, I think Indianapolis is the better team. I think the Patriots have the better quarterback. And, you know, I see this as their last best chance to realistically get a win. With the remaining six games.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Anthony Richardson has just struggled. It probably is going to be your best shot. I mean that, yeah, this is a look, if this Colts team comes in and beats up on you, I mean, I think that says a lot.
That says a lot. Well, the last two games, the Patriots have given up 138 quarterback rating against, like a 70% completion percentage against, 8 touchdowns and no interceptions. And Anthony Richardson has like a career completion percentage of like 47% or something. Right. So if he comes in and he tools on this defense like Tua did and like Matt Stafford did, that is going to be just like such an indictment of what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball.
I totally agree. Yeah.
All right. So that's any more thoughts on this Pats Colts game, Justin? We're going to wrap it up.
No, man. Yeah. I wish
what
I
do
had,
you say about it,
I, that's right? What I was going to say. Like, I wish I had more thoughts, but, I really don't. I you know, I'd like to see them go out and win. I'd like to see them take advantage of a struggling quarterback, but we'll see. I think you get some good telltale signs because the Colts still have a decent defense and a decent pass rush. So, you know, we'll see how Drake May handles the defense and we'll see how our defense handles Anthony Richardson and the struggling offense.
It will be, I guess it will be something to watch. You know, I mean, I'm bringing my two oldest kids and my wife. So the four of us are going.
Nice.
And we're going to be up in the GP atrium. I got 4 tickets and 4 atrium passes for the game on Sunday. But I mean, if this game is bad, I mean, I'm not going to probably stick around. I turned the game off for a little bit in the third quarter on Sunday. It was just, I was so disgusted that I, you know, I'm like diehard hardcore. I don't miss a play like you. I just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to react. If they have another ugly game, I'm probably just going to grab the kid and say, hey, it was an experience. Let's beat the traffic. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man. Well, that's all the time we have. I want to thank everyone that listened to this edition of the Ultimate Patriots Doctor Football Podcast. Have a wonderful week. Have a blessed and happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy it. Celebrating with your family, with your friends, doing the things you love to do. If you love eating turkey, then please do not take our culinary advice. By all means, gorge yourself. Have a wonderful time, and we'll catch you next week. And safe travels to everyone moving this holiday. Be good, everybody.